To Want a Boy. Chapter 14. The inside of Carl's house was every bit as impressive as the outside. It was immense. The living room had a high, heavily beamed ceiling and a big stone fireplace dominating one whole side of the room. All of the furniture was heavy, massive looking. The couches and chairs were all upholstered in leather, richly oiled. They had the patina of years of good care. There were heavy library tables and a gigantic coffee table in front of the fireplace between two divans. The carpeting was a deep rust and very thick. It was very definitely a man's castle. "It must have cost a fortune to furnish this," I thought idly aloud. "I imagine it did. I bought it furnished, except for the carpeting. It had the authentic Oriental rugs, but I don't care for 6 or 8 rugs in one room. I'm not all that hep on authenticity, and the room is much more restful with the wall-to-wall carpeting." I thought about his casual remark for several minutes as I walked around looking at the room. "That tells me a lot about you," I said finally. He sat down and stretched his feet on the coffee table. "What does it tell you, Bert?" "Well," I hesitated, "some would buy a house like this and throw everything out and start all over. Others would be afraid to touch anything for fear they'd goof it up. I'd probably be like that. But you're selective. You kept what was good, but had the guts to change what you didn't like." I'd stepped into deep water unintentionally, and I backed up quickly. I was not ready to delve deeply into anything. "Where can I wash up and change?" I asked. "I feel like the hayseed you talked about walking in here dressed like this." He jumped to his feet and led me up the stairs to his room. He had prepared for me. I had a connecting bath, and he left me to make myself more presentable. "See you later, Hayseed," he laughed as he closed the door. I had every stitch of clothes to my name in that one suitcase. I took out the suit and hung it up in the closet, then the slacks and 2 sweater shirts Bob had picked out. A couple more odd pieces and everything I own hung forlornly in that huge closet. I shrugged as I looked at them. Better to have the few nice things I had now than the closet full of unusable junk that had hung in my home. I got out of my work clothes and went into the shower. In my slacks and golfy sweater shirt, I was ready to face the world. And Carl Reingold. Funny what clothes can do to bolster a man's confidence. Carl's eyes widened as I walked down the stairs, and the look of approval made me feel good all over. "What will you have to drink?" he asked. I shrugged. "Got any beer?" He nodded and brought out 2. We drank them as we walked around, looking the whole place over. There was a pool of tremendous dimensions behind the house, and a grove of trees behind that. "How do you keep this place up?" I asked. "I have 2 couples living out behind the garage and the servants' quarters. The 2 women will cook when I have company, but generally they all just work at keeping it up. I don't like being waited on." I liked him more every time we opened his mouth. "Bert," he said as he walked back into the house, "my children are here frequently. I thought it might be easier if they drop in, if we said we were old army buddies." I nodded. "How often do you come through L.A.?" He was a little too casual, too unconcerned as he asked it. I'd noticed that he was overly cautious not to walk too close, not to touch me as he pointed out things. I knew my answer was going to bring a reaction one way or the other, so I stopped and looked down at him. "I left Kansas permanently this last trip, Carl. My children will be in California before fall, and I intend to get an apartment here in Los Angeles and make this my base of operations." I didn't miss an expression as his face reflected first one emotion, then another. Surprise? Hope? Delight? "You may be polished and urbane, Carl, but you wear your thoughts on the outside. Tell me right now what it is you want of me. What you're hoping for. I'm ready to listen." We had reached the living room again, and he motioned me onto a couch and then seated himself across from me. "I'm looking for a permanent relationship. One friend masculine enough and discreet enough that I will never bring shame upon my children. I hadn't meant to tell you these things until I knew you much better, but since you're so exactly what I felt you to be, and since you have asked, what is what I'm after." He had watched me carefully as he spoke. Now he reached down and stubbed out his cigarette. I couldn't answer him, not for a minute or so. My voice would betray the all-consuming emotions that washed over me. "My dream is coming true, Evan," my soul screamed. "I'm going to have color and happiness and friendship in my life with dignity." I dared not hope for all of this and love, too. Yet there was something so fine, so pleasant and open about this man who faced me. Already I respected him. I liked him. Yes, and let's face it, he did touch something in me. Otherwise, why had I run in to primp like a high school kid at the warehouse before I went out to meet him? Why had I told the dispatcher I'd let him know when I was ready for a load? I wanted to take him into my arms from the moment I first laid eyes on him. Perhaps this really was what had brought me back to L.A. in the first place. I've been hoping I could develop this sort of an arrangement myself, I said finally. I've had some pretty disgusting things happen to me since I last saw you. I can't return to the drabness I knew before, but I'd like to find a way to live with some dignity in this present world I'm living in. Carl relaxed then, stretching back against the thick leather cushion and propping his feet on the table between us. He closed his eyes. Good, he whispered. We need say no more about it. We have all the time in the world. I envied him now. He seemed thoroughly at ease. I was not. Now that it had been said, I wanted him desperately. His casual, cat-like grace, his lack of even a semblance of femininity, his small, beautifully proportioned body. All of these things made me miserably uncomfortable. The thought of not being able to even touch him for days made my gut ache, but I had made a promise to him, and that promise had to be kept. I got up and went to the refrigerator for another beer and then strolled out and stood by the swimming pool. I stood there looking at absolutely nothing for a long time. It did very little good. Finally, I went up to my room and put on my swimming trunks. The water felt good. I swam steadily, taking lap after lap. It would take a lot of exercise to work off the need that was building deep inside me. I heard a splash and felt the whirl of water around me as Carl entered the water. I hadn't noticed his approach, but now he began swimming alongside me, lap after lap. We swam silently together for some time. Then, as if the idea had been hatched by one, we turned to the side and hoisted ourselves up. We sat on the edge of the pool, our feet dangling in the water. I reached for my cigarettes, careful not to look in his direction. His nearness was already all too obvious. Just sensing his body less than a foot from me quickened my pulse. I watched his shadow weaving in the water at my feet. He got up and walked to the end of the pool. He climbed the steps of the diving board, and then there he was in full view, and my gut tied itself in knots. He was brown from the sun, a golden, bronzed brown, and his body was lean and muscular. He had small, tight thighs and a belly as taut and smooth as a young boy's. As he stood poised, ready to bounce the board, his wide, muscular flanks bulging out from the narrow pelvis flex, and I swallowed one hell of a lump in my throat. He wore a gold, low-cut knit suit that left most of his bronzed belly exposed, cupping the bulge between his legs into a hard, chiseled mass that thrust forward, drawing, magnetizing the eye of the beholder. I sat there mesmerized by his perfection. When he broke the spell, diving into the water in a perfect jackknife, I suddenly thought of the way Bob used to use his body, flaunting, posing all of the time, inviting. Carl had not done any of those things. He'd been so casual, never drawing attention to his body. I slid back down into the water as he broke the surface. I didn't want him to see how he had aroused me. Our eyes met and held for a moment. Then I pulled away and began swimming back and forth again and again. He sat on the edge of the pool, watching. I had to get out of here. I searched frantically for an excuse and finally found one. I swam over to where he sat. I think it might be a good idea if I look for an apartment close by. Do you know of any? He sat there smiling down at me, his thigh not a foot from my face as I looked up at him. He reached over and ran his fingers through my hair. Are you beginning to feel the strain around here, Bert? He asked quite openly, and so I was frank with my answer. Either I get out of here or I'm going to have to spend the whole weekend in the pool. It broke the tension somehow, and we both were able to laugh. I'm glad, Bert, he said finally. It's a good sign. All the similarities of attitudes would be useless if you didn't want me. Or you me, I added. He looked down in my eyes then. I've wanted you for months, Bert. That was never in doubt, he said quietly. There was no coyness in him, no guile or pretense, and my chest heaved as my pulse pounded wildly. I hoisted myself out of the pool and twisted around to sit next to him. Our bodies touched, and fire leapt through every part of my body. We sat there, side by side, not saying a word. I fought desperately for control, but too many things were against us. Finally, he reached over and ran his slender hand up my leg, bristling the hairs as he moved. He hesitated at my thigh, then turned to look up at me, and as our eyes met, he moved his hand across and let it rest lightly on my swollen tulle. My original proposal is rescinded, he said in a hoarse whisper, and I turned and took him into my arms. His lips were soft and freshly cooled by the waters of the pool, but a fire burned beneath his touch, and his tongue gently quivered against my lips, begging to be sucked in. I took it hungrily, and it darted responsively against me. His hands, still resting on my swimsuit over my organ, began to outline, explore, tantalize, working up my belly toward the head, which was now almost burst from the top of my suit. Tactile, tremulous fingers slid in the top of my suit and came into contact with the tip. He gasped as his fingers' tip touched the velvet skin. I lowered him to the cement deck, our mouths still clamped in a hot embrace. He lay there, working his fingers inside my suit, his legs still dangling over the side of the pool into the water. There on his back, his pelvis arched up, he waited for my touch. My hands slid down his ribcage, bunching the muscles with kneading fingers, then palming the flat, hard stomach. His navel was tiny and perfect, his lower abdomen taut and tantalizing. And then my hand was sliding under the gold suit, and I felt the thick ringlets of hair decorating his crotch. I could feel the rigid penis against the side of my hand, but I toyed with his hair, working slowly to the base of his manhood. He moved his free hand down to my trunks and reached deep to cup my balls, as though he could not get enough of me. Slowly, with tantalizing delays, I ran my fingers around his tool and gradually squeezed until I had him firmly gripped. Then I released and explored the head, the creases and crevices of his most desirable flesh. His body began to weave in my embrace, and he groaned and then shivered. Slowly, I worked his suit down, and he worked mine down just to our thighs. Then we let our staves touch and toy as we fondled and worked each other. "Come with me," he whispered hoarsely, and he pulled his suit up and headed for the house. I followed quickly. "Our love must be a private matter," he said. "Yes, Carl. Always," I answered, and I was overcome by that word, love. "It's not an evil secret to hide," he said. "It's something just too beautiful to share." And his lips reached up and clamped onto mine, and as I rolled his suit down his hips and let it drop to the floor, I slid out of mine, then wrapped my arms tightly about his ribcage and drew his willing, giving body snugly to me. The feel of him against me, his taut flesh rubbing against my skin, sent shivers of ecstasy coursing through my entire being. I reached down and enclosed his small little boy rump in my two palms, kneading, pulling him ever closer to me. Our two rods trapped between our bellies rubbed wantonly together, sending sparks of electricity to explode in our brains as we ground together. I stepped back then and led him to the bed. "Bert," he whispered. "Yes, Carl," I answered hoarsely. "Don't disappoint me. God, don't leave me." And I grabbed him tight again to me and felt the sting of tears in my eyes. "No, Carl, I couldn't leave you if I tried." He reached up and kissed my lips softly, then put a pillow beneath his groin and lay down on his stomach. I stood there kneading his buttock with my hands, feeling the tight muscles where I would penetrate. Then I took my rod in hand, spread the love flow around the head, and placed that head up to the muscled opening. Slowly I guided it in, feeling the heavenly membranes bunching, kneading my sensitized flesh until I thought I could bear no more. But I went further, stopping to let him accommodate me, then on and on until he had taken the full length of me. Gently, I reached under his thigh and took his cock in my hands. It was like flaming satin in my hand, and I reached around with the other hand and gathered the balls in it. Slowly, I began the cadence of love, moving the skin on his tool in the same rhythm my own organ danced to, and I filled him with a slow, serpentine thrust, pausing to savor the pressure as he rushed to meet me. As our desire became more demanding, the pace increased, and I began to plunge deeper and wilder, and my fingers kneaded and stripped his precious tool. And then the rhythm was lost in a frenzied grinding, shuddering spasm. His seed pulsed into my hand, and as I felt the sweet, sticky, hot liquid fill my palm, I spurted out my seed deep into his bowel. I held him, clamped tightly to me, retaining the ecstasy as long as it would last, and then I fell beside him on the bed and took him tenderly in my arms. "Don't ever send me away, Carl," I whispered, and I felt his body jerk against me, and his hot tears wet my cheek. It had been a long search for both of us, but now our life could begin together. The end.